Hi, and welcome to the Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by TheOutdoorInsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today we have with us on the phone Longbow Dan Liss. He's an avid traditional archer, does a lot of shooting and competition and stuff. And matter of fact, in 2012, he was ranked 10 in the world for the heavy bow class. He's been ranked in the top 30 for several years in longbow. And he's the man behind the longbow theory, which is, I would say, an educational a place for you to learn a little bit more about what and how of the traditional shooting. How are you doing today, Daniel?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm good, man. Can't complain. Archery deer season open here in Arizona for our late archery season, which is the best time of year because we actually start running. We start running now, which is really cool.
Yeah, I was talking to John Yokley about it, and I mean, it's crazy how it makes sense how late it goes for you guys, but what a cool way to do it, to be able to do it into January and stuff. That's pretty awesome for you guys.
Yeah, it's, you know, it makes for me, it's a really nice long season because I start in July usually. I'll go to California. They got a really early season for blacktail archery. And then, you know, I pretty much go from July all the way through to the first week of February, and I'm hunting. And then from February to July, I don't do any spring hunts really anymore. It's kind of my deal with my wife that's my off season and, time for family on that.
That's one of the hardest things is finding that balance, you know, to make everybody happy, yeah, and family and yourself.
Well, the one thing I got going for me is my business. One, I operated out of my home. So,
I got you.
You know, so I am home a lot, even though I'm probably in the field, you know, over 100 days a year. If you were to add up, like, say, if I had a normal 9-to-5 job, I probably spend more time with my, you know, my family and being around my kids and being able to help out and so on than most dads are able to with a normal job. So it kind of works out good. At least I think my kids get enough of me, and my wife would always want me around a little bit more, not because she wants to hang out with me, so I can help her with the kids. But
right.
Anyway. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do. And
so my real name is, you know, as you mentioned, Daniel Liss. Longbow Dan was kind of a joke that I did, and it stuck hard. I started getting mail like that. When I think about it, there's a lot of Dans out there, and I didn't see any Longbow Dans, and I was like, you know what, it's just a good way to separate myself from just the average person, especially me, with what I want to do in the industry and promote archery and help people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real easy way to find me, and, you know, that stuck real good. And then the longbow theory is something I wanted to start off as just an educational thing,
mm-hmm,
and it's turning more into, like my trials and tribulations. So if I mess up something, or if I see something I want to rant about a little bit that I see in the industry or at the tournaments, or just the screw-ups that I've done, because I've, mm-hmm, done plenty of them, so people don't make the same mistakes I did. So it is kind of it's a blog, but it's more of an educational one, because that's all I want to do is promote the sport. And shooting a longbow or even a recurve, you know, it can be kind of intimidating once you take the sights off, especially if you've been a guy that shoots compounds your whole life, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It can be very intimidating, you know, because there's no easy answer to doing it, you know. I mean, if there was a easy answer, I would say form and practice, you know, like not flinging arrows, but dedicated, you know, practice.
Yeah, it's a little different. It's a little different than using a compound where a compound, you know, a really good instructor can give you a system. They can say, okay, here are your steps. Do these steps, and if you follow those steps, you could be pretty proficient. Where yeah. I think with longbow or any tread, you know, equipment, it's a lot different because I've tried other people's systems, so to speak, and they don't work for me.
There's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah,
out there.
So it's like, yeah, a lot. It's a lot of personal dabbling, so to speak. A lot of personal adjustments that need to be able to be that need to be made, and mental adjustments that it's definitely something you can't go and practice, you know, once or twice a month and be proficient at. In my opinion.
Right. No, and you hit it on the head. You know, like a huge side of it is that mental aspect. And Joel Turner's got a system about the mental side of shooting and kind of settling in on what you do. But, you know, the way I look at the mental side of it is just being able to concentrate on what you're doing. You know, don't think about home. Like what we always got told before we went on deployments, you know, the moment you start thinking about home, bills, other stuff like that, like you're going to be out of whack. It'll put you, you know, and kind of in a little bit of danger because you're not there at your game where you need to be. And it's the same with a stick bow. If you're going to shoot your bow, shoot your bow. You know, don't worry about the dogs running behind you in the backyard or like this morning my wife's car broke down. You know, don't be worried about that stuff. If you're going to go shoot, you know, like I put it in my schedule now, like, hey, this is my dedicated time throughout the day where I shut my phone off or if I'm going to bring the video camera out. And, you know, shoot my bow and just do that, and I don't worry about nothing. And sometimes it feels a little selfish that I'm doing that, but, you know, that's what you need in order to get better. And like you said, you can't just do it once or twice a month to get proficient at it. So it definitely, it's different. You know, you totally nailed it, like I said. There's no back wall, you know. I mean, you're creating your own back wall. There's no let off. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's different. But you know, form-wise and everything, I watch a lot of like the pros or the masters, you know, like even compound guys like John Dudley, huge fan of John Dudley. You know, Tim Gillingham, he's a good friend of mine. I love watching him shoot, and, you know, I probably bug him more than anybody about arrow questions, and it's weekly.
I'm actually going to have him on today.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because I was asking him the other day about node tuning, you know, N-O-D-E tuning, and that's something a lot of people have probably never heard of, and, you know, just figuring out different methods to get the best flight, because shooting a stick bow, you know, we end up putting weight on there. We are trying to induce flex in the arrow, you know, that paradox to get around the shelf so that it does, you know, flatten out and straighten up as much as possible, where a compound bow, you know, there's not much paradox. I mean, there is, but because of the knock travel, you know, you're hitting the release and that string is perfect behind that knock every time. You don't get it like you do with the stick bow. So, but I like watching a lot of people and then kind of coming up with my own stuff. So I don't do anything crazy different. I harp on form, you know, because I think form and confidence is going to overcome a lot of things. And if you miss, you miss. You know, it's called hunting, not shooting. Yep. You know, if you hit every animal you shoot at, I mean, it'd be fun. I mean, but really, there's no, I don't know. That I think that's a huge learning curve to hunting is missing. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love it all.
I get questions shot at me all the time. So if, And I asked this of another guest of I asked this of South Cox. So I'm going to ask the same question of you, just to kind of lead into what the following questions: gap shooting versus shooting instinctively. What are your thoughts, and what do you do?
Well, so gap shooting versus instinctive. Personally, I think the only, and this is just me, so you might get some hate mail, but I don't think anybody instinctively shoots a bow. You know, it's not like picking your nose or because it itches or something like that. It's it is something that you've practiced. The only instinctive arrow that you ever shoot out of a bow is that first arrow, if that makes sense. Because you don't know what it's doing. You're just kind of hoping it's going to do that. And then with gap shooting is knowing what you're going to do. You know, I think, you know, I use split vision a lot, so I can still see my arrow and reference it for my left and right.
Okay.
And if you shoot gap long enough, you know, you don't, it doesn't feel like gap shooting. Like, you know what your ranges are. You know if it's a 50-yard target, I hold half a foot over its back, you know, and it's going to hit every time. You know, like, that's my whole thing with gap is why hope when you can know. So,
yeah, I agree.
You know, because, like, even, you know, like the, you said, it's called Hunt Masters. If you look at guys like Howard Hill, Fred Bear, you know, when they shot long range, you know, and I'm not saying Fred Bear was a great shot, don't get me wrong, but if you ever watch him group arrows, he was no better than anyone else that just normally shoots their bow. You know, he had ample time in the field. Ethics were a little bit different back then at shooting at animals at longer ranges, but he killed animals at 60-plus yards, you know, over and over again, and it wasn't because he hoped. You know, he was referencing something, and if, even if no one says they don't reference something, it's like wing shooting a shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, archery is, if you have a tuned arrow, it's all about straight lines. You know, you've got your archer's tee. An arrow isn't going to go left or right unless you make it go left or right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, as long as your form is good, you know, it's like wing shooting a shotgun at close range. So you're just referencing it. And I don't know, people may hate me for that, you know, but I don't care. It's what I've learned, and I don't like hoping I'm going to hit the target. You know, it's,
no, I kind of agree with you. I do think if you're more of a snap shooter, you're,
that can be instinctive. I'll admit that. Yeah, I'll agree with you.
That's more instinctive, and kind of that's how I grew up shooting. Was like the second the string hits your face, you're letting go. You know, and back in the day, I used to be really good at it, and now, like, I tried to go to a gap type format, and then I went try to go back, and I shot split finger my whole life, and now I tried shooting three under, and I got so screwed up in my head, and I'm just now finally starting to find my rhythm again and find the system. And that kind of actually leads me to one of the questions I have is developing a system for shooting, you know, that works. You can you give me some step-by-step or a system that someone could adapt easily and become a better trad shooter? Do you have, like, something
so
that
I
you
think
can
the,
tell
the
us?
Best
on, you know,
system,
it's kind of hard to show.
Yeah, I mean, the best way for someone that wants to get accurate with the trad bow quickly is shoot gap. You know, I mean, people are like, oh, I want to shoot instinctively, but, you know, unless you're snap shooting, you know, it's very hard, you know, to call something instinctively when you've done it more than once. You know, it's just like pitchers, they practice. I mean, days, they know exactly how fast to move their arm around the shoulder, you know, like when to let go of the pitch. It's all a science. But a system for shooting a stick bow, I would say form is number one. And that goes with, like, hand placement on the bow. Make sure you've got that lifeline settled in. You're not gripping the bow too much because just like a compound bow, you're going to induce torque. Addressing the string properly, you know, I go with a deep hook. So I'm seated well into that first groove in my fingertips, you know, and using your body to draw. Because if you, and a lot of people, your draw length will grow if you use what's called a rotational draw. So instead of pulling straight back, driving your elbow, how do I want to say this? So driving your elbow around your shoulder and pulling with your elbow is going to, it's going to contract your rhomboids and your scapula, and get that arrow more in line, and it's going to lengthen your draw length quite a bit. And then the next part is a goofy part. You know, it's your sight picture. You know, you got to acquire a sight picture, whether it's split vision, gap, just burning a hole in the target, whatever it is that guy wants to shoot. And then what I've found out to be super critical is, you know, back tension with a stick bow. Like Levi Morgan even admitted he doesn't use a whole lot of back tension. But with a stick bow, you have to have it, because if you don't, you're going to collapse. And if you collapse, you're shortening up your draw length, which is stiffening the spine of your arrow. And it's going to affect downrange accuracy every time.
Right.
But by continuing to pull through that entire shot, you know, you're not letting up and you're getting that same repetition, because your body's only going to pull back so far.
Right.
Before you have the string start coming up on your chest and all that stuff. You know, once you hit that straight line, sit there and just keep holding that, you know, driving the elbow back. You know, like a lot of guys say, you put a tennis ball in between your shoulder blades. Just keep squeezing that and driving. And then the release, you know, don't snap off your face. Follow the curvature of your face, or like some people call it, paint your face when you open up your hand.
Right.
Paint across your face. And then the aiming thing is what you want. I think gap shooting is the best way. Figure out what your point on is, and then cut that distance in half. And then see where your arrow hits. So I start with like a big 4x4 block, and I'll put a line on that block, like a horizontal line, and I'll put the tip of my arrow on that line at, we'll say, 20 yards, and then I'll shoot at that line. I'll shoot 6, 7, 8 arrows or whatever, and then I'll go up there and I'll measure the average distance that my arrows are shooting above that line. And that what that tells me is my gap. So if I'm, you know, 15 inches above that line, I know when I aim at a deer, I need to aim 15 inches below the spot I want to hit.
Right.
You know, at 20 yards. Now, some people, it's weird because you're looking at grass. You know, you got the tip of the arrow pointing at grass underneath its belly or something, and you're like, this don't feel right. But as long as you trust your equipment and trust yourself, it's going to hit.
Right.
So, and then you do that for every yardage. And I usually keep like an index card or a cheat sheet with me. And I'll do it all the way out to 80 yards.
Wow, and, that's awesome.
I mean, after like a month or so, like, you don't even need the card no more. It's just there, and it just goes, you know.
You learn it like anything else.
Yep, yeah, so that's probably the easiest way to do it, you know, without getting too frustrated, you know. Because I know guys that shoot the same as they did 10 years ago, and they don't want to say, hey, I don't want to try gap shooting, or I don't want to try this, or I don't want to try that. You know, and they just...
It's a little scary because it'll mess it messes with your head. Like I said, I've been messed up now for 2 years. Before, like, I mean, you could throw a milk jug up in the air and I'd snap shoot and I'd whack it every time. And now I'm all jacked up. I don't think I could do that anymore. But anyway... I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt what you were going. Keep going.
No, I mean, that's fine. It is. It is kind of a scary thing to do because it's something you're like, well, now I got to start aiming. Like,
yeah,
I'm shooting a stick bow. I'm not supposed to aim, you know, like, I mean, we're all aiming. Some are just thinking about it and some aren't, you know. It's like I said, it's people refer it to baseball, but I don't think that's a really good way to look at it. I'd look at it more like wing shooting. Because you know where the barrel is, you know, and it's a straight line. And as long as you've got your, you know, it's all about alignment. You know, that's the key. And that's something, even talking to Tim, you know, he's a huge fan of alignment all the way through the back of the knock. You know, knock travel is what changes things. Knock travel is what induces more paradox than not. You know, a lot of guys have a hard time tuning a stick bow, you know, with bear shaft tuning because they're getting false readings because their release isn't clean. And one arrow might look good, you know, but if they go to fletch it up and then their release grows and it gets better, you know, now they're shooting a crappy arrow, you know, once they put a broadhead on there. So, you know, like today's equipment is so, I mean, even the wood bows, even South's bows or, you know, Big Jim's bows, you know, any one of those companies that make even just bow risers or, you know, wooden bows, or half of them are cut to center these days, or you can request to get them cut to center. And they're machines. You know, they are like, it's not two pieces of fiberglass glued together with some wood, and you know, maybe it might shoot well. You know, like these are like precision engineered pieces. You know, they run through lathes that are within a hundred thousandth of an inch and all this stuff. And
yep,
they're tools, you know, like use it. The only bad thing that we put into that trad bow is ourselves. So as long as we can figure out what we need to do, it's going to shoot, you know?
Yep. Yep. I agree. What's your philosophy, or have you even messed with string walking?
So I haven't jumped into string walking a whole lot. I know guys who do it very well. It's another method, you know, like, and you got to play the game depending on what you're doing. If you're hunting, do whatever you need to do to kill that animal, you know, like to get the most confident, ethical shot in your book. You know, what's ethical for me might not be ethical for you or whatever, you know, for that individual, shoot whatever way you need to do to make like the most accurate shot on an animal. But as far as like ASA or IBO, you know, you can't really do that. So guys are gap shooting with like a really low point on, shooting like 30, 40 pound bows, a heavy arrow, you know, with a 20 yard point on, and it works really well for them.
I have a 20 yard point on, and my bows are 50,
you know, like
50, 55. Yeah. And I don't know if it's because my arrow's super heavy. I shoot about 520 to 550, depending. They're not super, super heavy, but you know, it's good hunting arrow.
It's a good weight. Yeah, I mean, every bow is a little different too, depending on your knock height and all that stuff. Because your knock height and your tiller is going to change that as well. You know, you can, especially with ILF bows, and that's why I've switched over and I shoot mostly ILF risers, which is the international limb fitting. Because I can take one riser that I really like and I can put multiple limbs on it, so I'm not changing anything about the bow. I'm just changing the weight by just snapping limbs on and off.
Right.
And you can play with the tiller, you know, you can play with the weight. So like when it comes to tuning, if it's a little stiff of an arrow, you can increase the weight a little bit depending on where you've got your tiller bolts at. It's just super, it's very easy. It's a very easy system, and yeah, it's got some nuts and bolts in it, but much less than what a compound would have. And as long as you take care of your stuff, you know, like, you'll never have to worry about it.
Yeah. I've never actually, I've shot a couple just, you know, pranking at the archery club or something like that. But, I haven't had much experience with like a machined riser or a metal riser with, you know, ILS or any of that. Most of my trad bows are either bows that I've built, which are, you know, some of them are laminated, some of them are self bows, some of them are, you know, I have a couple older like bears and stuff like that, or recurves that, you know, Bear Kodiak, and, I just picked up a Diamondback longbow. It's a reflex deflex, but it's, you know, it's a single piece. I don't have any takedowns or anything like that. So I never got into the, more modern, style longbows at all. And I know, it's something I kind of want to look into. I'm actually going to be heading down to Tucson in the next couple of weeks to do some hunting. And I already spoke to the owner of Black Swan.
He's got a cool bow.
Yeah, I want to go check that out, man. And I don't know if it's because I'm just intrigued by the fact that he's getting 200 and something feet per second out of a 50-pound bow. But,
well, he's shooting real lightweight arrows too. You know, like the way, like I've shot them before, and they're very snappy limbs. I mean, it is a good bow. You'll feel, I mean, I have a 30-inch draw, so you might feel a little more stacked than you would on, you know, a bow that doesn't have as much of a kick to it. But I mean, it's a nice shooting bow. It's fast for sure, and it's got some mass weight to it. So if you've just been a wooden shooter your whole life, you know, once you put a mass, like a riser that's weighted down in your hand, you're going to see your arrow tip settle a whole lot more.
Okay.
So
I was curious. I told him, I was like, you know, when I come down, I want to shoot a couple different ones. I'm kind of interested in that 52 inch hybrid, I guess call it a 52 inch hybrid, but,
yeah, he's got some goofy limbs. Yeah. I know he's got a couple different sets of limbs.
I just I don't know, the technology part of it. It's weird because I got into I lean towards traditional because of the romance side of it, the connection with the people that came before us, and mm-hmm. at the same time, I'm such a bit of compound shooter, so I'm very into performance and technology and stuff as well.
Well, right. I mean, we've grown. You know, we made fire.
Yeah.
You know, one day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, we're growing, and you can, and the romance is still there. You're still addressing the string the same way. You know, the only thing you're getting out of today's bows is, like you said, performance and repeatability. You know,
right.
Indians used to make them, and I'm sure even with yourself bows, you shot them for a little while and they break on you, or like a limb gets softer on the top limb or the bottom limb. You know, and with today's stuff, you just don't get that. And
not with my bow.
So much. But with today's stuff, you know, why would you shoot something? And I'm not knocking any guy that's primitive at all. If that's his style, I'm all for it. You know, you're crazier than I am for doing it that way. And there's definitely that romance because you built it.
Right.
I'm lazy to do that, you know, like, I don't know, I just,
it, no, I,
it's
I
a
got
lot
you
of work, know. Yeah, it's a lot of work, I'm lazy, I'll just say that, I'm lazy, and it's, you know, like, for guys like you that build that stuff and go out and hunt with it, I mean, that's
yeah,
that's
I don't hunt
challenge.
With it, though. See, I like to build them, but I don't hunt with them, because I'm too afraid I'm going to wound something.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, I've shot two animals in my whole life with traditional archery. One of them was a hog, and it was out of ground blind over a feeder. It was just, you know, easy slam dunk. His target was breathing. So that's it. And I've shot
for
rabbits.
Hogs, that's a great way to do it. I mean, if you can do it, I think it's a great way with hogs. I mean, even baiting in general, you know, like, I'm not going to say I'm a huge fan for baiting, but
no.
I lived in Alaska for a couple years, and I talked to some really good friends up there about baiting, and I gave it a shot, and me and my buddy killed two bears in 1 week doing it. I mean, and it was cool because we got to be selective. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're not allowed to shoot a sow with cubs, you know, and we wanted decent-sized bears, and you're able to just watch, you know.
Right.
It's really neat instead of hoping that an animal comes down or, I mean, if I was out there glassing and trying to hold spot and stalk for a bear, I mean, that would be cool too. But the baiting was really neat just because you knew there, I mean, it's kind of like whitetail deer hunting, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
not saying baiting whitetail deer, but you're kind of waiting for them to just walk by. And that's like the most boring part. Everyone says it's good just to be out there. And it is for a couple of hours, you know. But if you sit in a tree stand all day, you're mentally, like, blown. You know, your brain is just like, what the heck? Every squirrel you thought was a buck, you know, it's just like.
Yeah. Here's the thing, and this is what I learned. So hunting, I'm not against baiting at all. It has its place and it has its use for work, especially in areas where it's super, super thick and it's just not possible to hunt any other way. But what you were just getting about with like hunting out of a tree stand or whatever, hunting out of a blind for whitetail or whatever, it becomes more about the leading up to your actual hunt than the hunt itself. Your hunting goes in your... You're figuring out the travel corridors and all, and the patterning and the learning behavior and all that stuff all goes into it before you climb into your tree stand. And yes, once you climb into your tree stand, it's just a mental game of, can I stay in here long enough before I go crazy? But the hunting all happens before the actual shot.
No, that makes
different.
Sense.
I do a lot of spot and stalk hunting, primarily a spot and stalk hunter. But I do my fair share of tree stand and have in the past. I used to be a very avid whitetail hunter for a long time. And I had that same problem. Well, I used to still hunt when I learned how to hunt whitetail back east. And, you know, that's walking through the woods and you're kind of using woodsmanship. It's a different scenario. So once I first started stand hunting, I was like, God damn, this is the most boring thing in the whole world. But because I didn't know what the hell I was doing, I was just picking a place somewhat arbitrarily to find, or going off somebody else's, you know, advice to go sit in this spot. Once I got into learning how, where, what, when, so on and so forth, to set a tree stand, then it became more like when you're sitting on bait. You know something's going to come by. You're not just hoping. So it becomes a different
thing. I spent 20 days with this deer that was at least 160 inches. Every night he'd come out, and I checked the camera, and he was there. He'd come walking right by my stand and look at his camera. But every time I'd go out there in the daytime, he'd give me a slip. Yeah, you know, like, it's hard. It's definitely a game. Like you said, you got to do your homework. You can't just throw a tree up or a tree stand up.
Here
in Michigan, these guys can bait. But this is a whole different kind of hunting. This is something I've never seen before. I got a job at Cabela's as a lead, and just the people I talk to, and these are all people that drive the industry, you know, to sell products and stuff. The ignorance is insane, especially, I mean, it's just people just don't want to practice. You know, they just think that they want me to sell them a magic product that will bring the deer to them, you know, or that their crossbow can shoot 75 yards, you know, as a pancake. And it's pretty frustrating sometimes, especially now it's Christmas, because they're actually mean. they're really rude. If they're like, hey, I want to, like, you know, Aaron Snyder said his wife wants a gun that knocked down trees and had no sound to it and didn't kick. You know, like, guys ask that question. You know, guys want stuff like that, and it's like,
yeah,
you can figure that out, you'll be a rich man. You know, like, that stuff hasn't been thought of yet. You know, you can't make an animal do that. And I guess that's a romance in itself, getting into his backyard. You know, because I just moved here, like, 2 months ago, and I went out a couple times, and, like you said, off some word of some dudes, I went out there, I found a real nice spot. I waited for daylight, you know, to put my stand up just because I never really had eyes on the property. And I'm halfway putting my tree stand up, and I get blown at, you know, like three does blow at me. I was like, damn, you know, like, I mean, close. I mean, they were within 30 yards of me, you know. But, yeah, you got to do your homework. I mean, it's definitely.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah.
It's different for sure. Well, what should a guy look for in a bow? What are, like, key features, you know, when you're looking for a traditional bow? You know, give me, like, an order of importance.
So
you know,
I
come down
order
to
of
feel
importance?
In the end. It comes down to feel, but in the end, but.
Order of importance, I would say, you know, if it's anybody, you know, a guy that's never shot a bow or even a compound guy that's been shooting 70, 80 pounds his whole life, you know, start low, 40, 35, 40, 50 pounds. You know, drop a ton of weight off of it because, and I've always been told, you know, like, if you're going to get into traditional archery, pick the lowest weight that state allows you to hunt with, because even that will kill an animal. You know, a sharp broadhead and shot placement will kill an animal over anything else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Indians did it with crooked sticks and rocks. So, like, these guys that are like, man, I need a 60-pound longbow, or I need a 55, you don't need it, you know, like, so go lightweight. I mean, that's an easy one to go off of because you can order them or get it made. If you're a compound guy, I tend to lean more towards having them try aluminum risers just because they can get skinnier.
Mm-hmm.
Like my Tribe Halo or, you know, they've got a bunch of different risers out there, the Tri-Tech, the CD riser, which is a heavy riser, but they've got interchangeable Jaeger grips, so you can make them feel like a compound grip. The Hoyt Buffalo, the Tiburon, those have really skinny grips, so the natural feel
of shooting the compound is the grip and the hand placement is all the same. So that's probably another one. And then I like longbows, you know, like, and not just longbows, but I shoot a 66-inch longbow, and it just makes it smoother. You know, if you get a bow that, you know, I'd say if you're 6 foot plus, you want at least a 60-inch recurve, 62-inch recurve. You know, if you've got a draw length of like 29, 30 inches. You know, some companies make them different. I know Big Jim's got a Thunder Child where you can shoot like a 58-inch bow at that draw length. But, you know, get as many of them in your hands as you can and feel them all. Like, go to, what is that place out in Colorado, Rocky Mountain Specialty Gear? Go to a traditional shoot. Like, most of them dudes are super easy to work with, and they'll just let you try their bow. That's for people who don't have, like, a big thing like that. You know, get your hands on as many as possible. Don't pick one off the internet and order it, because...
Yeah.
I mean, you're taking a 50-50 swing there. The Hoyt Formula has got a good system. It's a pretty smooth bow. You know, I like ILF just because I can choose what limbs I want and I'm not stuck with one. You know, there's a lot of different stuff out there. So I would guess probably the grip is probably the number one thing, you know, and then the shootability of it. You know, you want it to shoot where you want it to shoot. So if you grab a bow and you're shooting and you are just shooting extremely left with it, you know, maybe you need to go more towards a center cut riser, you know, or, you know, you want it to be as comfortable and as confident building for you as possible. You want a bow that's going to shoot better than what you can make it, so that when you do make a mistake, it's got a lot of forgiveness in it. So recurves usually get the snappier speeds. You know, with today's technology, it's pretty close, depending if you go with a high end, like longbow limb. But you do, man, it's hard. It's hard to see because they've got limbs out there now that almost have like let off. I know Border came out with a limb. It's called a super curve, and it's a very hard curving recurve. So it's like two and a half pounds of draw weight per inch as you're drawing it back, or maybe, you know, pound and a half. But as soon as that limb tip curls over, you're going down to a 1 pound increment of draw. So it almost feels, it gets lighter. As it's it's incredible. But, you know, companies are getting so good. It's hard. I mean, my best advice is get your hands on whatever you can. Go to a shoot. Even if you don't shoot traditional bows, go to a 3D shoot. I know indoor leagues are coming up. You know, go buy a Samick Sage if you have to. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with that bow, and it's a great bow to start off with, especially to work on form and stuff. And get your hands on everything you could try before you invest a bunch of money, because some of it's pricey, you know, like...
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
You know, I think the Hoyts are $700 to $800, you know, and that's with the standard limbs. You know, most aluminum risers are like $400 or $500. You know, if you want a wooden bow, depending on what wood combination, I mean, I've seen bows go to $2,000, you know.
I would say, yeah. I've seen some custom ones are three.
Yeah. Yeah.
$3,000, you know, like, exotic woods. And, you know, that's right. The other part of it too. There's a lot of craftsmanship and beauty in some of these, you know. I'm in love with wood, man.
So me too. No, black and white ebony is probably my favorite wood, and I'm gonna get a bow made in that just to have it. You know, I don't have a fireplace yet, but I'm gonna buy one just to put that bow over it. There's some real pretty stuff out there, and like you said, the technique that they use to get that wood to blend is unreal. You know, I think right now the prettiest bow I've seen in a while is that one. That Luke Johnson is shooting from South Cox. He did a really good job at black and white ebony.
It's a pretty bow.
But man, there's stuff out there that's got gold inlays, silver inlays. I mean, stuff that I wouldn't want to shoot. You know, like, because I beat the crap out of.
That's
myself.
A thing. Yeah, some of them are like definitely wall hangers. I mean, it's just like rifles, you know, or shotguns. There's shotguns out there that are
$40,000-$50,000 with all kinds of crazy.
Yeah, you get like one of those old Satori's or something like that. You know,
yeah,
like
something
over
all
and unders. You're like,
and, yeah.
I don't want to get a ding on this. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I had a guy bring in a bow. It was like a Bear Polar. It was like a Fred Bear Polar longbow.
Mm-hmm.
It's old. It's an old bow. And this guy's like, hey, can I shoot this anymore? And I just looking through it, I can see all the cracks
mm-hmm.
in the glass, you know. And I was like, no, I wouldn't shoot this, man, but I would get this, like, resurfaced for sure. And then I'd hang, if you don't have a fireplace, buy one and hang it up over it, you know, because it is a pretty bow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just some things out there that, it's like,
yep.
And back then, you know, that's when they use that stuff. They were sitting there with hand scraping tools, like you make your bow, you know.
Yeah, I've built a couple bows, you know, with hand scraping and all that stuff, but I use power tools now.
Yeah.
Just because I want, you know, I mean, sanders and stuff. I don't really have like lathes and routers and stuff like that that make it, you know, super precise, but I still do it by hand, but I use like hand sanding and stuff like that, belt sanders and whatnot. And,
well, it's easier. Yeah, that's what
yeah.
I would do. If I had to do that, that's
it's
what I would
faster.
Do.
It's faster.
Yep.
And yeah, it's definitely a little easier on your arms. So,
yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'm super amateur. I really don't. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I've managed to crank out a few bows that work really good. Nothing that looks real pretty, but
it's a tool, you know. Like that's what
yeah.
I've always said. You know, guys are like, you know, you're not traditional or whatever, and I'm not. I'm a bow hunter who shoots a longbow. That's it, you know.
Right.
Because and the word traditional can be so skewed today, you know.
Yeah.
Look
yeah,
at the Oneidas
sure.
or like the Golden. What is it? The Eagles or whatever that they had in the 80s and the 70s,
yeah.
like that could be traditional to somebody, you know, like, but a
couple of wheel bows.
Yeah. You know, some guys, yeah, it's pretty cutthroat on some of the forums. I mean, with traditional guys, it is like, I'll go out and hunt. I mean, most of the people I hunt with are compound shooters, you know, like that's
yeah.
just the way they are. And it doesn't bug me at all. I'll shoot right next to you at the range and have no problem. But there's some guys, man, if you shoot an animal over 20 yards, you're unethical. You should go to hell. Oops, sorry.
Yep.
But, you know, you were just completely wrong for the sport. When their idols killed animals quadruple
yeah.
that length, you know, or if you don't shoot cedar arrows or, you know, like there's some dudes
yeah.
out there who are just cutthroat on these forums. And it's weird, you know, like you would think that it wouldn't be divided because it's been around longer, you know, but
yeah,
it is, you know, I mean, it's a good community, but man, there are some cliques, you know, we'll call them that are just so different compared to the compound world. But I guess that could go with you guys too. Like,
yeah, it's,
you know,
all
shoot
over
Matthews.
Place, gun hunters versus bow hunters.
Yeah.
Matthews
yeah.
guys versus toy guys. It's
yeah.
pretty ridiculous. I've actually got into it on the podcast a few times. And I'm not going to do it right now, but the hunters on hunter hate is pretty ridiculous. We got enough problems fighting. We got enough problems fighting the people who are against hunting to worry about fighting with each other.
Right.
It's
right.
It's
I mean,
stupid.
We're making us look retarded. You know, we're making ourselves look even dumber
shit.
By fighting each other. You know?
Yeah. It's dumb. It's dumb. Well,
it is.
Where can our listeners find out more about you?
So I run the Longbow Theory page on Facebook. You can just type in the Longbow Theory or the Longbow Theory on Instagram, and then YouTube, the Longbow Theory. And that's where I'm trying to switch most of my stuff over is the YouTube. I love Facebook and the way that it works. But it seems like everything's going more towards YouTube, Instagram. It's going back to those. Facebook is actually becoming more of what it's supposed to be.
Facebook doesn't allow you to reach any of the people that follow you anyway, unless you're paying
right.
for it.
Exactly, and
ridiculous.
I'm not paying for it. No,
yeah,
I don't make
stupid.
Enough money to pay for it. You
it's,
know, like
it's,
they,
I mean, it's great for them because they make a shit ton of money, but I mean...
Yeah, it's weird. Over the last like year or so, like it's getting more... It's actually turning into a social network instead of like a or maybe I just quit following all those other people that were just pushing stuff down my throat. And it's, and that's why I don't see as much of that. But it's, yeah, it's different. I think everything's going more towards Instagram, like, or even, what is that, Vimeo?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of good other mediums out there to get your stuff out there that I'll probably start pursuing more. Yeah,
awesome.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, it's good. I love doing it. It's, like I said, it's a blog, but my whole goal behind it is just to push traditional archery and the curve, you know, or like we'll call it the scary part of the unknown, you know, of not knowing how to shoot. So I've been super blessed in the industry over the past few years with some good people, and I just want to give back, you know, like I just want to, I'm not there to promote specific products, you know, I do use specific products, but I'm not going to like push anything down anyone's throat. And I just want, I want our community to grow, you know, like what your guys did over the last, you know, 15 years with technology and everything. Like, I want that passion to grow. Because if you go to the ASA shoots and stuff, I mean, it's incredible to see 2,500, you know, almost 3,000 people in a weekend from all over the world to come shoot these targets. You know, like, it's awesome. I mean, these guys are even the pros. I mean, you talk to, like, Dan McCarthy, Levi Morgan, Tim Gillingham. I mean, these guys are picking the wrong idols. Like, Lil Wayne is not a good idol. You know, like, all these people, you know, in the sport of archery, it's still so small. You can go talk to these pros and figure things out. You know, they're the nicest people in the world. Maybe if they have a bad day, they won't be. But for the most part, it's a good community. And, yeah, it's a great community. So, but even the trad world, you know, it's growing, definitely. I just maybe it'll take 15 years to get it to that level, but
yeah,
my patience level, it's hard. I don't know, maybe it's my mentality of go, go, go. But, it's good stuff, though. I love it. And I've dabbled with compounds here and there. I shoot them at work because I could just get the shoot bows for free or whatever. But maybe one day I'll plink around with one. I've always wanted to do like a compound with no sights, shooting fingers.
Yeah.
That's always been pretty intriguing to me because
there's a couple guys out there that do it really well.
I know Ted Nugent did it for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, I tried it. It's like you get too much bow pinch on my fingers,
it's funny watching these bows grow because they went down to that. They're like a 30-inch axle bow is the greatest thing for a bow hunter, and now guys are starting to realize that maybe we should go back up a little bit. And you're seeing more guys buy 32s, 34s.
Well, guys out west always want longer bows. More forgiving, you know, spot and stalk. You know, the 30-inch thing is for, you know, most of the country whitetail hunts. Okay, so the biggest market is whitetail hunting, and most of whitetail hunters either hunt out of blind or they hunt out of tree stand. You want a bow that's more wieldable, you know, easy to maneuver, not hit branches, and so on and so forth. So that's kind of where that comes from, and it's driven by what's popular. Now I think there's a big movement towards the more Western game and spot and stalk. I think that's becoming a lot more sexy to people than, you know, going on the back 40 and throwing up a tree stand. So, you know, that's kind of why the market is going back and forth. I don't think anybody ever thought, you know, let's go with a 30-inch because it's a better bow. I think that's what the market kind of needed or was going to, for, like I said, because driven by that style of hunting. But
no, that makes sense.
Anyway. Well, man, I want to thank you for coming on.
Dan, I appreciate you offering.
Taking time for us. You guys want to check out Dan's, you know, page, Longbow Theory. He's got some good info on there. I look forward to seeing something from from you some of those videos, educational videos, because I need to find myself a new form and a new system here of shooting, because I really want to score something with I think I want to try this javelina season with one of my bows that I've built. That's kind of an important thing to me. I think it's one of those notches I want to put in my belt, you know, harvest an animal with a bow that I built. So, well, again, thank you for coming on, and I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
Definitely. Yeah, thank you for having me on. And good luck this January.
Thank you. Appreciate it.